And welcome to another edition of Odyssey. My name is Mike Schultz. I'll be your host today. And we talk about ancient mysteries, metaphysical topics, and unfiltered news of the day. Our topic today is astrology. We're really going to delve into it. And my guest is an expert. Her name is Alicia Katz. And a lot of us are intimidated by astrology. It's very complex, but she makes a complex subject easier. Welcome to the show, Alicia.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Okay, why don't you tell us a bit about your background and how you got so involved in astrology?
Well, I've been doing astrology now for about 12 years. I actually started studying when I was studying astronomy back in the planetarium in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I wanted to make a necklace that had all the planets around me. And somebody said, oh, well, that's an astrology chart. And I was very, very skeptical. But when I learned to read a chart, I realized that not only did it tell me where the planets were, but it told me where all the constellations were.
Sure.
And then the light bulb went on. I realized, hey, wait a minute. The zodiac signs are the constellations in the sky. And that's when I got hooked on astrology.
And they're all evenly spaced, aren't they, around the planet?
Yeah. The 12 constellations each take up about 30 degrees around the sky. Now, in the sky for real, they're of different sizes, but when we interpret them into astrology, we make them equal.
Okay. What I want to ask you is, sometimes skeptics say about astrology that the charts and the systems were created thousands of years ago and the universe has shifted. It's different now, so that it's no longer accurate. How do you respond to that?
Well, the way in modern times that we think about it is there's two different astrology systems. There's Western astrology and Eastern astrology. And Eastern astrology from India is what we call sidereal astrology, and it still looks at the sky exactly as it is now as opposed to the way it used to be. And in Western astrology, it's actually based on the seasons instead of being based on the actual locations in the sky. So on March 21st at the equinox is actually when the charts is when the new year in Western astrology starts.
Sure. So it doesn't matter the year, actually.
No.
It's based on the season. And can you explain the concept of precession and how that plays into it?
So like you said, thousands and thousands of years ago, where the stars were in the sky has changed because the Earth's tilt has changed. And so as the Earth's tilt changes, what we see in the sky changes a little bit. And so, like I said, Western astrology has kept the same locations and then changed the interpretation based on the seasons. And Eastern astrology still moves with the sky.
I see. So why don't we get into the sun sign? Most everyone knows what their sun sign is. They're a Taurus or an Aries. Is that like the main component? How does that play out in our personal lives, each person's sun sign?
Their sun sign is how you see yourself. It's your identity, and that's the one that you read when you read the paper.
Right.
But it is only one out of you. Actually have all 12 signs in your chart, but it is the main sign. And what that means astronomically is that's where the sun was in what constellation in the sky at the moment that you were born. And so it's your strongest identity. It's the strongest part of your personality.
Okay, now what about the rising sign? Explain how that plays into our everyday lives.
Now, the rising sign, some people actually consider to be more important than your sun sign. And the way the rising sign is determined, that no matter what time you were born, if you looked dead east, what sign is on the horizon right there? That's how your ascendant is determined.
And how does that determine? Is that your inner self or?
That's actually your outer self. That's how other people would describe you.
Okay.
And it's the face that you put on to the world.
Oh, I see. But once people really get to know you, then they would see your sun sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, and then the third, because I've heard you speak before at a New Age Expo, and you talked about you kind of need to know your sun, your rising, and your moon, and those three main components. So why don't you talk about the moon sign?
So the moon sign is, again, what stars were behind the moon at the moment that you were born. And your moon sign is your emotional body. It's how you relate emotionally to things.
Okay.
And so you put the three of them together. Your sun is your identity. Your ascendant is how other people see you, and your moon is how you emotionally relate to the world.
Okay, so people should know those basic three aspects, correct?
Yes.
And then they could have a general blueprint of their personality traits?
Exactly.
Okay, I want to remind everybody that you have a really great website. It's called GiveZodiacGifts.com. astrology.com. Why don't you tell us a bit about what kind of products you have related to astrology?
Well, like I had said before, when I started studying astrology, it was because I wanted to make a necklace of the planets. And so what I do is I actually make necklaces and bracelets that are wearable, readable astrology charts. So not only are they pretty, but every single bead has meaning. In fact, you can take the necklace or bracelet off and put it on the table and do your astrology off of the jewelry.
Interesting. So do people feel spiritual energy or something? Have they reported those kinds of things when they wear it?
I get a lot of amazing testimonials about the jewelry. People really do feel themselves in the jewelry. And we've even, you know, done experiments with it where I'll take two people's necklaces and blindfold a third person and say, well, you know, whose necklace is Alicia's and whose necklace is Mary's? And 75% of the people can actually figure out whose is whose just from the feel of the jewelry.
Well, what kinds of reports have people given you? How has it changed their lives?
I've had one woman tell me that it's made her closer to her truer self. They're very good for grounding, and they're very good for centering yourself, that when you wear it, you're literally grounded and centered in who you came into the world to be, that throughout our lives you've had masks that you put on and experiences that you had, and every whether it's a wonderful experience or a horrible experience, it colors the way that you look at the world. And so when you wear my jewelry, it takes you back to the moment you were born and who you came into the world to be.
I see. So it gives people a lot of self-insight.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about, we talked about the sun, the rising, and the moon. Once you know those, and the only way to know those is to get your birth certificate, right?
For the time, in any case. So you know what day you were born, and you know where you were born. So the time is the one factor that not everybody knows. But either it's on your birth certificate, or you can ask relatives. And so once you have those three pieces of information, then we can run the chart.
Okay, now let's talk about, I know you offer that service of the natal chart. Why don't you explain what kind of information is in the chart?
So the natal chart has three major components to it, the zodiac signs, the planets, and the houses. And if you've ever seen an astrology chart, it's broken up, it kind of looks like a clock, and each of those lines on the clock are the houses.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so let's start with the zodiac signs. So the zodiac signs are the parts of your personality. And, you know, everybody knows that they can look up their own sun sign in the newspaper, but it may or it may not be accurate for the day. And that's one of the reasons why people are skeptical about astrology. Because the truth is that, again, you're not one sign. You are made up of all 12 signs. And so each sign has its own personality. Aries is action-oriented. Taurus is very, very grounded. Gemini is intelligent. They're communicators. Cancerians are very intuitive. Leos are very outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
Virgos are known for being very, very precise.
Right.
Libras are balanced. Scorpios are very, very intense and dramatic.
Yes.
Sagittarians are adventurous. Capricorns are very, very sensible. Aquarius is very idealistic. And Pisces is very sensitive. So in different parts of your life, you have these different parts of your personality.
Now, also the 12 signs break down into the four different elements, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Water, earth, air, and fire.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so the three fire signs, for instance, would be somewhat similar, like Aries, Sagittarius, and Leo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So all of them are very vibrant signs. Water signs, Cancer, Scorpio, Pisces, they're very watery. They go with the flow. They have a lot to do with the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
The earth signs, Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn are very grounded, are very solid. They have their feet on the ground, quite literally.
Right.
And the air signs, Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius, tend to be a little, I don't know, spacey.
And over-intellectual, perhaps.
Yeah, you never like to think about things.
Which can be a good thing or a bad thing, right?
Exactly. It's all what you do with it.
But if you need a deep thinker, then you talk to the air signs. Now, what do you in the area of relationships? What do you feel about opposite signs kind of complementing each other? What do you think about that?
Well, in the kind of astrology that I practice, I definitely believe in looking to the strengths of any situation and any dynamic. And I myself am a Cancer, and personally, I love Capricorn people. I find that they really do strike a balance.
Mm-hmm. Lots of water and land.
Yeah.
Complements each other in your case. And I've heard that sometimes, like, fire gets along really well with fire, or you get along with a sign who's similar to you.
Yeah, because you, in that case, you have common ground.
At least as a friendship, maybe not in a relationship.
Right.
But for friendships, you might gravitate toward people like you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the chart is, I know it's about 20 pages or so, it's quite detailed, and it gets into all 12 houses then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we print our charts on parchment paper in a binder, so you get a very nice chart presentation, and it comes with a key so you can figure out all of the glyphs and all of the symbols. And it goes into your sun sign, it goes into your ascendant, it goes into your moon, and then it starts relating all of the planets in the signs and in relationship to each other. It's very, very detailed.
So once again, it's not overwhelming like it's going to be some big book.
No.
It's 20 pages, it's down to earth, and it gets right to the point of what you need to know about astrology.
Yeah, the language is very simple. It's very accessible.
Okay, why don't you remind us of your website again and tell us about some of these more creative projects on your site.
Okay, so it's givezodiacgifts.com, G-I-V-E, zodiacgifts.com. And not only do I make the astrology jewelry, but I'm also one of the biggest distributors of zodiac products in the world. And what's special about what we do is most of the items are handcrafted by people that I know personally.
Really?
Yeah. So we have glassware. We have sandblasted glassware, pint glasses, mugs, shot glasses that have your zodiac signs and the ruling planets and your symbols on them.
Okay.
We have dolls. We have...
Well, what I'm looking at right now is astro rocks. Why don't you explain what these rocks are? I guess you carry them with them and they're charged with energy. How does the astro rock work?
Sure. Now, astro rocks are made by Rock Your Life down in California. And what Marianne does with those is she's selected for each sign four crystals that come in this little cute pouch. And it comes with a little card that tells you what each of the stones are doing. And what's great about them is instead of being the stones that are normally associated with your sign, Marianne's chosen stones that balance the weaknesses of your sign. And so when you're in a particular mood, you can carry that one stone with you to give you power and strength. Or you can tie all four of them up in the pouch and carry the whole pouch with you.
I see. So it's a very attractive package, and it gives people kind of a talisman.
Yeah, they're very beautiful.
Oh, I see. Okay, so let's get back to astrology. I want to ask about people born on the cusp, if they're right between two signs, do they get an aspect of each sign, or how does that work?
That's exactly how it works. When you're on the cusp, what that means is that, for instance, the day that the sign changes, like on March 21st, it goes from Pisces to Aries.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're born on from the 20th to the 22nd approximately, you're going to have little pieces of your personality that fall in both signs. And you'll generally find that you resemble one more than the other,
mm-hmm.
but you definitely have an element of both.
Okay, so if you're probably within 2-3 days of that sign, it can be a blending.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so many people have debates about that.
Yeah, and what we do at Wandering Stars, we actually choose one day and include it in both signs because in some years, a day will fall in, let's say it'll fall in Aries in one year, but in Pisces in another year.
Oh, because of a leap year and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Okay, now, so every sign has strengths, but they also have weaknesses, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you address that? Does each sign have kind of like areas they need to watch out for?
Exactly. Each sign has its weaknesses. And when you read your chart and when you wear your jewelry, you learn about what those weaknesses are so you can catch yourself in it and stay conscious of it. For instance, the Scorpio can tend to be really melodramatic and make a really big deal out of the smallest things.
And revengeful, right?
Yes.
I mean, they cannot show anything on their face, be like a poker face, but all of a sudden they'll like try to, you know, get revenge on you.
They'll sting you.
Right.
They'll
sting you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the more you learn about astrology, the more you can stay conscious of these elements in yourself.
I see. Like, for instance, I'm an Aries, and what I've been told is that, you know, we do have a lot of fire energy, we're excitable people, but we can be self-centered
mm-hmm.
and self-involved. Have you found that, you know, to be an aspect of Aries?
Yeah,
or, also, sometimes we have a hard time with groups of people. Aries tend to be more independent.
Mm-hmm. Aries' sense of self is very strong.
Right. So what about, like, if you're out in the business world, which signs tend to do best and make it to the top in, like, a corporate type of competitive setting?
Sagittarians.
Really?
Capricorn
really?
Is one of the signs that is great for business, because Capricorns really do well with structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to set up a company, Capricorn will get it done. They will look at all the ins and the outs and all the rules and the regulations.
Now, what I know about Capricorn is that aren't they like the goat that goes up the hill? They never say die. They always, always keep on working.
That's a great analogy for them.
Another sign
that does great in business is Virgo, because Virgos are very precise. They're very, very detail-oriented. Nothing gets by a Virgo.
So like accountants and probably astrologers, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they're so detail-oriented, yeah. And they're good people if you have problems or issues, right, to go to.
Yeah.
They'll help you be problem solvers.
Very much so.
Definitely. Now, what about, I would think in the business where Libra would do the best, because they seem so balanced, like they can get along with everyone.
As far as the networking goes, a Libra would be great for that.
Right.
But a Libra also is so concerned with fairness and balance and justice that they may not, they're going to have trouble making some of the harder decisions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So on the surface, they might do well. That, like, getting along with networking and people.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, at a party or something, a Libra would, like, tend to get along with everyone.
Yeah. Now, if for my company, I would want my CEO to be a Leo.
Really? Why?
Because they're going to go out there and shake hands and schmooze everybody and get everybody on board with the project.
And one of our recent presidents is a classic Leo. You know who I'm talking about? Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton. Yeah.
And he was just, that was his personality. He was so, you know, he had all that pride that Leo has, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so social and outgoing. And he went all around the world and met all the leaders and was friends with everyone, right?
Yes.
So pretty, you know, successful politician in terms of his personality. Now, what about, I've heard with Pisces that they take from all 12 signs that they change the mutable.
Yeah, the Pisces is the last sign in the zodiac, and so some people people who do evolutionary astrology consider Pisces to be the most evolved of the signs, because the person ideally has been through all of those lifetimes.
Okay, but they can tend to be what kind of dreamy and artistic, that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing, or
they're very in touch with their spiritual sides.
Really?
Yes.
And sacrifice, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, tell me, well, what would be the downside then of Pisces? Just that they're too not grounded, or?
Yeah, Pisces will tend to take on other people's energy, that if they're in the room with a very strong person, they'll tend to withdraw.
Really?
A little bit, or take things personally a lot of the time.
So they're sensitive?
Yes, very sensitive.
Okay, now tell me about Gemini. Is that really like a dual personality that we're dealing with a Gemini?
Well, what's interesting about Geminis is Gemini has the twins, but it's not necessarily that you have an evil twin or a dark side and a light side. I've found that a Gemini has kind of two elements to their personality. Like, they'll either work really hard or be really lazy,
right?
Depending on the day.
Okay.
Or they'll be really talkative or very, very quiet, depending on the day.
So they shift between the two aspects.
Yes.
Now, both my parents are Geminis, and they married each other, and they're like twin flames. Do you find Geminis hook up sometimes? And
a lot of the time they do. It's almost like having four people in the room, so it keeps it interesting.
Interesting. So what signs are we missing? Well, back to Capricorn. You know, I've heard it, as much as they're hardworking, you know, Elvis Presley was a Capricorn, that they are prone to vices. If they don't watch out, they can really fall into addictions and things.
Sure.
You found that to be true in your mm-hmm. you know, reading of the signs?
Yeah, because a Capricorn will get really involved in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll throw themselves into any project or anything.
Okay.
But a Capricorn would make a great poker player.
And a Scorpio would too, right? Because they don't show their hand or their face.
They have that poker face that you mentioned.
Poker face. Now, Sagittarius, I've heard that, you know, they're pretty, like, lucky and tend to land on their feet and that sort of thing?
The Sagittarius will always land on their feet. They're always looking at the bright side of life.
Right.
They don't get worried about things. They don't get hung up on things. They're always finding the bright side of things, and they're always looking for something new and exciting.
And they jump around a bit, right?
Very much so, yeah.
It's hard to get them to stay on one topic.
Anything that catches their attention, they tend to follow shiny objects.
It's funny. I have a sister who's a Sag, and she's always, like, if you go out and drive with her, she'll drive all around the community and jump from one store to another and say hi to everybody and just keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the character of the horse, you know, with the arrow. They just kind of run through the community and they know everybody.
Yep.
It's really funny. So what signs haven't we talked about yet? Taurus. Let's talk a little bit more about Taurus in May, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Taurians are very, very grounded. They're very, very solid. They know what they like. They like to have a beautiful environment around them.
Okay.
A Taurus is a great friend because they're always going to be there for you.
So they're the most down-to-earth, right?
Yeah.
Of all the signs.
Mm-hmm.
If they take a job, they'll, like, keep it for 20 years. Normally.
Exactly. Yeah, they're not real interested in change. They're interested in stability.
And they like their comfort, right, and
mm-hmm.
food, and a home environment that's comfortable.
Exactly.
And going along with the home environment, I've heard that Cancer is all about the home and security.
Yeah, Cancer is the sign that's classically associated with the home and with the mother. It's very, very nurturing. It's all about cooking great meals. Loving your family. Cancers create great home environments.
Okay, so if you want to settle down with someone, then you might want to,
yes,
if someone's
a Cancer,
then you know they're probably going to want to settle down, right?
Yeah, and they'll stay very loyal to the relationship.
Okay, and Aquarian, now we're in the age of Aquarius, correct? Or are we still in the age of Pisces, or are we transitioning?
I believe that we're in the age of Pisces right now.
Still. Because my understanding was the late 1960s, you know, that musical Hair, they were talking about the age of Aquarius, that we were shifting into this new era. Every 2,000 years, correct?
I'd have to check my dates.
Okay, but every 2,000 years roughly, correct?
Yes.
For each sign. But somewhere that's the next sign we're transitioning to, correct?
Yes.
And my understanding is that the computers and internet have become so prominent because we're entering the age of Aquarius, which is about lightning-fast communication.
Hmm, that's interesting. That's something I hadn't considered before.
Yeah, and that, you know, the Pisces was the symbol of the fish of Christianity. We had 2,000 years where Christianity was very dominant, and that we're kind of going out of that into more of a new age. I mean, these are things I've just picked up on metaphysical lectures and travels and things.
Nice, very nice.
But it would be interesting to know that date when it would transition, supposedly. So Aquarians, tell us a little bit more about them.
Aquarians are very, very social. They see how the world can be, and they want to motivate everybody to make changes for the better.
Now, that's the sign that's concerned with, like, humanity, right, and helping other people?
Yes.
Okay.
Friends, society.
Okay, so did we leave out any, or did we cover them all?
I think we covered them. We kind of jumped all over the board, but I think we hit everybody.
Just to give people a sense, right? Because
yeah.
It's fun to talk about it. You know, when we're all out in a, you know, you always say to people, what's your sign at a party or something? And it's fun to know a few things about your sign.
Sure.
To share with people. So we talked about the cusp era, and are there signs that are just are more fixed and then signs that are mutable?
Mm-hmm. And what that means is we have fixed, mutable, and cardinal signs. And so the cardinal signs are the ones that are the start of every season. You know how I said that Western astrology is based on the seasons. So mm-hmm. Aries is at the equinox.
Okay.
And then Cancer is at the solstice. And then Libra starts the next equinox. And then Capricorn starts the next solstice. So those are the cardinal, the cardinal signs.
Right.
And those are kind of the archetypical signs. And then you have the fixed signs. And the fixed are the ones are very, let's see, how do I explain these?
Would that mean that your sign is more fixed?
They're very confident in who they are.
Okay, and which are the fixed signs?
The fixed signs are Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius.
Okay, so they have a strong sense of their identity
mm-hmm.
and their personality.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the mutable signs are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces.
And what does mutable mean?
And that means that they are they're changeable. They will go with the flow, and they're willing to look at dynamics.
Okay, so a little more flexible.
Yes.
And I didn't quite understand cardinal. I mean, how would that play out in your everyday life? Like, I'm an Aries, I'm cardinal. How would that manifest? It just means that it's a stronger sign in the heavens or the celestial body or...
I'm at a loss for how to explain it. The cardinal signs are, again, they're the seasonal signs. It's like they're archetypical, like spring. Aries is spring. It's very bright.
It's the first, right?
Yeah. Cancer is the beginning of summer.
I see. So it tends to relate to the season.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. I never understood that because I've heard astrologers talk about cardinal signs and didn't quite know what that meant.
Yeah, if you break it out into nature, then it really begins. You get a better sense of what the signs are about.
Okay.
Capricorn is the beginning of winter, and you know they've got a little bit of coldness to them.
I see. I didn't realize that. So let me ask you. You mentioned your website again, and why don't you talk about a few of the books that you recommend on your site?
Okay. It's GiveZodiacGifts.com, and one of the things that we also carry are books and astrology software. And with the books that we've chosen, we have one book that is one of the great quintessential books if you want to learn more about astrology. It's called The Only Astrology Book You'll Ever Need, and it's $17, and it comes with a CD-ROM, and it has everything that we're talking about in depth. It's one of the best resources.
That's a great
that
title.
You can turn to. And it really is the only astrology book you'll ever need because you can look up just about anything in it.
And it has visuals on the CD-ROM as you're reading the book then?
Yes.
Because sometimes you need to see these constellations and things, and it makes more sense now. And Astrology for Dummies, huh? You included that one.
Astrology for Dummies is actually one of those tiny little pocketbooks. It's a great little stocking stuffer.
Okay.
And actually, interestingly, it's got a lot of information packed into that tiny little book.
Well, it's good to buy it in mail order because I'm always embarrassed to buy the dummy books in person. I wish they'd change those titles.
Yeah, well, this one's great for really relating to the basics of astrology.
And here's a fun one, How to Spot a Bastard by His Sun Sign. What's that book about?
That is our bestseller book.
You're kidding.
And it's absolutely hysterical. These women have written this book where they talk about men in a very, very unflattering light. So if you are, if you're breaking out of a relationship or you don't want to get into a bad relationship, you look into this book and it will make you laugh at them.
Okay, cool. Now, does astrology relate to animals?
Each of the signs has its, two of the books that we carry, and these are a little bit harder to find, are Astrology for Cats and Astrology for Dogs. And what she breaks the signs down into, talks about the life of the animal in terms of the zodiac. For instance, both my cats are Cancerians, and it's very true. They're all about their food bowl.
So it helps you understand your pets better.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps
you find out what sign your pet is. There's instructions for that as well.
Okay, yeah, like the time they were born. That's the key that some people just don't know. You know, what if you just know you were born in the morning? Is that close enough, or do you have to have the exact time?
For your chart, the better accuracy you have with the time, the more accurate the chart is going to be. But
right.
Within a couple hours, you're pretty good.
Really? Within a few hours?
Yeah.
Okay, so what else can you tell us? What are the main points that people need to know about astrology? I mean, is it basically the sun, the rising, and the moon, or are we leaving out some aspect of it?
Yeah, the planets and the houses.
Okay.
And so I'll start with the houses because it's a shorter conversation. The houses are the pie slices on the chart, and those are calculated according to the latitude on Earth that facing east.
Mm-hmm.
Is the beginning of the chart, or the first house. And the midheaven is the point overhead that the sun reaches on that day.
Okay.
So, you know, in the summer, the sun goes right overhead. In the winter, the sun doesn't quite climb as high.
Right.
And so the midheaven is your kind of where you're going in life, and that's based on the highest point the sun makes. And then if you take that point at the horizon and that point overhead and you divide it into two, that's how the houses are calculated.
I see. Now, you have like a house for money, correct? A house for love?
Mm-hmm. The first house is your sense of self. Second house is material possessions. Third house is communication.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth is home and family. Fifth is pleasure. Sixth house is health and service. Seventh house is relationships. The eighth house is the birth and death cycle. It also involves money and windfalls. The ninth house is education and philosophy. The tenth house is career. 11th is friends and society. And the 12th is subconscious.
Okay.
And so when astrologers do their interpretations, let's say where your Aries is, will be in one of these 12 areas. And so it's taking the personality of the sign and how it relates to that particular part of your life.
So, for instance, in your career house, you know, if you're like a Cancer career house versus a Leo, you're going to have a much different type of career.
Right. If you're a Cancer, you're probably going to do something for a career that's on the nurturing side.
Or home-based or something, yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Like a home-based business.
Right.
If you're a Leo, maybe theater would be right up your alley.
Yeah, something in the spotlight or
exactly.
Giving speeches or whatever. So you can really pinpoint it, exactly, and then you can realize, oh, that's why I have so many troubles in my career or whatever, or that's why I'm doing so well. You can kind of see it.
Right.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then what was the other you mentioned?
And then the other one is the planets.
Planets, okay.
And what's interesting in astrology is that we call everything planets. We call the sun and moon planets. We call the moon's nodes planets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why with the whole controversy in the debate right now about whether Pluto is a planet, it doesn't really matter to us.
All that matters is it's some kind of object that has a gravitational pull, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And that's exactly how the planets work. And that's one of the things that people don't realize about astrology is it is all based on gravitational pull. That the moon, and this is a great point that you can make to people who are skeptical.
Sure.
Our bodies are made of 86% water.
Right.
And if you are on a full moon, the tides get higher and lower. So if the moon's gravitational pull is strong enough to affect the oceans on our planet, then wouldn't it make sense that if our bodies are 86% water, that the moon actually pushes and pulls on our bodies as well?
It does make sense. The word lunatic comes from that, correct?
Exactly.
Lunar.
And it's a fact. You can call up the police station that our incidence of crime and mental illness increase at the full moon.
That's what I've heard, that there's statistics, and they're well aware of this phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good point to skeptics. So anyway, we're going to wrap this up in the next few minutes. Why don't you give us the website one more time and any last thoughts you want to share?
Sure. It's givezodiacgifts.com. And again, we make horoscope jewelry. We make charts that are wearable, readable astrology charts. And not only do we do them for your birth chart, but we also do what we call destiny manifestation talismans as well. So if you have an area of life that you want to grow and learn in, love, money, health, stress relief, empowerment. We have jewelry for better astrology charts for those areas of life as well.
That's fantastic. It's such a unique service. So I want to send everyone over to that website, givezodiacgifts.com, and get the catalog. Thanks for joining us, Alicia.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, she was a great guest. She really makes it all easier to understand. I feel a lot better about understanding astrology. And once again, I saw her at a lecture, and whenever I'm on my travels, you know, going to seminars or speakers in my metaphysical journey, if I see somebody who's really great, I always ask them to come on the radio. That's actually how I got my co-host, Candia, who will be joining us soon, as I saw her speak at the New Age Expo. I really enjoyed her her talk. She's an intuitive and talks a lot about manifesting and making your life better, and really wanted her to be a co-host, and so that's how that all worked out. So anyway, this is a big week for myself. My new DVD is coming out. It's called The Temples of Stone this week. You can see a picture of it and all the description at my website. It's at fountainsofyouth.net. Fountainsofyouth.net. And I really tackle a lot of metaphysical subjects in this DVD. It runs about 90 minutes. And, you know, in my first DVD, I talked about the six ancient, sophisticated cities all around the world that sprang up overnight. You know, in Mexico and Egypt and Samaria, China, India, and Persia. This one covers a seventh civilization that sprang up overnight. It was very advanced. It was in Cambodia. It's called Angkor Wat, and it's a spectacular temple. It's the largest religious structure in the world. It's surrounded by a moat of water, and it's absolutely fantastic. You have to see pictures of this. So go to fountainsofyouth.net, and you'll see the picture of the temple in Cambodia on the cover. It's actually, this temple is on their flag, the national flag of Cambodia. So anyway, I believe that these ancient monuments were aligned to astrology and the stars, and it's all kind of a grand chessboard, a grand cosmic message. I don't believe it was random. And it was left behind for us as clues and a message. So I really dig into this in my DVD. It's called The Temple of Stone, and it's my second one. I'm very proud of it. And we have a lot more pictures this time. We have I have a great editor, and we have, boy, probably over 200 pictures. And we've just filled it with all kinds of visuals as well as the fascinating audio. So in addition to ancient monuments, you know, I always talk about those. I get into many other topics. I get into UFOs. I visited the UFO ranch in Washington, which is run by James Gilliland, who has a show on this network. And I talk about all the different aspects of the UFO sightings at the Washington ranch in Trout Lake, which a lot of people don't know about. So I really want to expose people to this hot spot of UFO sightings. And I really dig into the Disclosure Project. And that's, you know, people always say, well, why haven't government officials come forward and talked about UFOs? Well, they have. And the book Disclosure Project is a compilation of hundreds and hundreds of government employees, really high-ranking people in the CIA and FBI, etc., who have come forward and honestly told their stories. Some of these people are very old. They're at the end of their life, and they say, look, you know, 30 years ago I was involved in Area 51 in Nevada, and I know I saw a spaceship, or that kind of a thing. So it's a fantastic book, and I really delve into it in my DVD, The Temples of Stone. So on the cover, there's, you know, the big picture of the temple in Cambodia, and then there's a smaller picture of a crop circle. And I really delve into the symbols and signs and the codes that I feel are broken at this point, that we understand a lot more about crop circles and why they're here and what the whole purpose is. So to me, they're not so much of a mystery anymore, and how to tell the hoaxes from the real ones. And there's definitely been some real clues and symbols that have been left along the way. They started really appearing in England around 1980, so we've had 26 years to study them, and it's time to really draw some conclusions as to what these are all about. So it's just a wealth of knowledge on many, many different topics. I get into the creature of the Jekyll Island, and we talk about the Federal Reserve Bank and how it's actually not really a bank of the United States anymore. It's a private cartel of banks, and I know Federal Reserve, I know that sounds like it's part of our government, but it actually was shifted and changed about 100 years ago. So I talk about this topic as well. So definitely see my first one, The Sands of Time, first. It won't make too much sense unless you see them in order. So I recommend people watch The Sands of Time, and they're each $15. I've kept the price, you know, reasonable. And then after you've seen The Sands of Time, that 90-minute presentation about the ancient astronaut theory, that's the whole overview. I call it like the roots and the the roots and the branches of the tree. And then my new DVD, Temples of Stone, is kind of filling in all the details of this tree. So that's I would see them in that order, The Sands of Time first, and then The Temples of Stone. And once again, they both have lots of interesting photos and slideshows from around the world. So there's been a lot of interesting stories in the news. By the way, the website for our network has totally been revamped. It's bbsradio.com, like boysamradio.com. And you know, they've done a lot of work on it. It's really got and we have a busy signal there, but anyway, it's really great to go to this site, and then you can you know, tap into all the different shows and find out. So check out bbsradio.com. My show is called Odyssey, so if you click that on, you can get more of a biography of how I got into all this information. I'm certainly not a likely candidate to be involved in metaphysics at all. I grew up extremely traditional Christian background. My family's from the Midwest, very down to earth. I grew up in the Methodist Church, actually, which is a little bit more liberal than some of the hardcore fundamentalist churches. But, you know, with that type of background, it took a while. You know, it was really more when I was an adult. I started reading metaphysical books. Probably Shirley MacLaine was the first, you know, Out on a Limb, what's your classic book? And that's when I got started. If Candia is on, let us know. She'll be on any moment. So sometimes when people just are getting started with metaphysics, I do recommend the Shirley MacLaine books, Out on a Limb, Dancing in the Light. Those really helped me kind of get started on this whole journey. I followed, you know, her. She questions everything, you know, and I kind of felt like I was her going on this journey in the beginning. So it's a really good book to get started. So anyway, Candia, are you there? I heard a beep. Candia, are you joining us?
You guys have got Alicia still.
Oh, Alicia?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Candia's our next guest, so you can go ahead and hang up, and then the show will repeat tonight, and Candia will be joining us any moment. All right, so now the phone line's cleared. Anyway, so I was talking about, you know, I had a really conservative background, and I feel that that was for a reason. I was supposed to be, you know, indoctrinated and kind of exposed to traditional Christianity, and then as an adult, explore metaphysics. And my life is kind of about reconciling the two and trying to figure out a path that's almost in between, taking, you know, the truth and the best of metaphysics and the best of Christianity and kind of merging them. And when people ask me what I am right now, I tell them I'm a metaphysical Christian or a Gnostic Christian. And we'll talk a bit about the Gnostics. They're in my new DVD, actually. That was the first form of Christianity that really developed after Christ. So the first 300 years, Christians were considered Gnostics, most of them. And it wasn't a fear-based form of Christianity. There was not a lot of talk about the devil or the fear-based aspects of Jehovah of the Old Testament. The emphasis was more on enlightenment and learning and just finding, it was metaphysical, actually, is what it was. But a lot of those Gnostic books got lost, or what happened was there was a big council of Nicaea in 325 A.D., and a lot of those books were taken out and removed from the Bible, and many were burned. There was a giant library called the Alexandria Library, and many of these treasures were burned down, unfortunately. And they weren't discovered until the Dead Sea Scrolls of 1945 were found. And luckily, we do have Gnostic material from 2,000 years ago because of this treasure that was found. So I do get into the Dead Sea Scrolls and what they say, the Gnostic texts, and how they talk about early Christianity. And they're called the Nag Hammadi. It's kind of a funny word. It's N-A-G-H-A-M-M-A-D-I, Nag Hammadi. And those were the Dead Sea Scrolls. So if Candia is going to join us, just speak up. Otherwise, I'll continue with the rest of the show. I like to talk about what's going on in the news every week. So I'm going to InfoWars right now. If you're online, you can join me. It's InfoWars.com. And there's another big name, a filmmaker in Hollywood named David Lynch, has come forward asking some real serious questions about 911. And, you know, several months ago, it was Charlie Sheen caused a big stir, and now it's David Lynch. He's the filmmaker who made Twin Peaks and Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive, and he was on TV in Europe, and he asked a lot of these questions. Hello.
Hi.
I heard a beep. Hi there, Candia. How have you been?
Good.
Great. Can you speak up a little bit? It sounds a bit far away.
Better?
Nope.
Do I sound like I'm in the bottom of the hole?
You sound like you're calling from Alaska, very far away.
Well, let's see. What planet could I be from today?
Well, how does it sound, Don? Does it sound good?
He was having problems with telephone earlier.
Candia, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So what's your latest project? What have you been doing lately?
What is my latest project? Actually, I had a lecture last night, an open gallery reading, and what we got into, at, you know, obviously because of the time of the year that we're at this moment, to the differences of the male and the feminine energies that are on the planet and the conflicting energies. Here I'm going into energies, but it really is. Sometimes it's more difficult to explain what it is that I see. I know there are others out there, though, that do this and can feel it as well. we're still dealing with some very old, outmoded masculine energies on the planet. Obviously, we're in war all over. And then with this new insurgence of feminine energy and how it is affecting us personally. And, of course, it comes out in terms of the holidays. And we've got all these old traditions that people aren't resonating with as well as they used to. You know, they don't want to do all the hoopla that was part of growing up, part of all the, you know, the commercialism in the stores. And so how it's affecting everyone individually because of this change that we're going through and how it's affecting us physically and mentally and emotionally.
So you see the holiday of Christmas as changing?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. How do you see the changes? How do you think it will be in the future? A little bit less commercialism and buying products?
Oh, wouldn't that be just fabulous if that were so? I would love to see that. I mean, here's even a change in my world, and to me it's more environmentally sound, except for, this is where it gets funny, because at the same time, I really feel that we need to be more in touch with nature. However, we did do, because I have teenagers, they want a tree, we have a fake tree now. And to me, that's more environmentally sound. And yet, at the same time, you lose that connection with the earth. And that's, you know, if you think about it, one of the reasons people did it in the first place is to bring the earth into the home and the connection with the trees and the earth. And so, and on that level, we could still really use that for our energies, our health, and our mental and emotional stability. However, we've got, again, this changing of the guard, and I think we need to honor our planet in a lot better way than we have been, which, again, then goes into honoring our own physical bodies, because it's, you know, it's a representation or the mirror image of Earth, and all you have to do is look at how we don't honor the Earth and how we don't honor our bodies. For those who watch the Fast Food Nation, well, what was it? The one about, you might be able to help me on this, Mike, the McDonald's movie. You know,
right.
Super Size Me. And how all of those foods that people just automatically go to because they're in a hurry and or because they're cost effective. You know, when you're feeding a large family, going to McDonald's or a fast food, it is much, much cheaper. However, all of those chemicals then affect our whole body's systems and affects us mentally and emotionally as well. So I think it's really, really important, especially back to the holidays, when we have access to so many treats and goodies, to be very, very mindful of what it is that we do to our bodies, that we still are exercising, that we still are eating the right kinds of foods, that we get enough sleep, we take time to get outside, even if it's raining and even if it's, you know, cold, to get out and, you know, breathe deeply of the earth and get our own frequencies in alignment with the earth and how it's changing so that we can resonate with it. Now, have you come in contact with at all with this? I mean, you personally with friends where feelings of being discordant?
Well, as far as the fast food, it's true because I've looked into this, and a lot of it is genetically engineered and tampered with. And as a matter of fact, Taco Bell is having a terrible problem this week with the E. coli virus. So what I've done is just started shopping more and more at these healthy grocery stores, these health food places,
oh, yeah.
And I feel so much better.
Oh, well, good. Well, I'm one of those, like I told my audience last night, I'm a food Nazi. I mean, really, when it gets down to it, I'm very, very clear about foods. We need to eat as many natural foods as possible. I mean, and I don't always buy organic. However, you know, just because of cost, I would love to support every organic farmer out there if possible. But when you're raising kids, it is much more difficult to do that. There are products, though, that you can buy that are awesome that, and again, you can get them in the health food section of your regular grocery store or go to a health food store, that will take off all the pesticides and the herbicides and insecticides off the plants and vegetables that you, I mean, your fruits and vegetables that you bring in. You know, a little bit of hydrogen just bleach, basic bleach will also do the same trick. You put a little bleach in the water and let the vegetable sit for a point in time will help clear off all of the residue that is still remaining on the plant that will also help your health. So the more you can do that, the better, because, again, our bodies vibrate at a frequency, and so do foods. If, you know, a long time ago, how was it been 10 years ago, probably when the Celestine Prophecy was written, and I loved it because towards the end of the book, one of the characters in the book actually vibrates so high that he literally disappears. Well, I feel that's what we are striving towards, not necessarily disappearing, but raising our frequencies to be more light bodies, which is what we originally were. And so much of that has to do with how we take care of ourselves, and that again goes into the foods we eat. And again, everybody is so fast, we're not as mindful as we could be. But that goes, to me, back into being very conscious daily with our thinking, our thoughts, and what it is we do for our bodies.
Well, what's interesting is television is very powerful, and they spend millions of dollars on these ads to make them enticing to us, and they use emotions to get us to go to these fast food places. So if you turn off TV, you won't be as tempted.
Oh, I think you're absolutely spot on, and it really hits, again, I'm using the example of living with two teenage boys. It hits that sector, and that's what they're marketing towards. The boys, or the young men that have an appetite that, you know, I have to have every cupboard in the house full, because they'll come in and then their friends come in, and it's as if, you know, a herd of locusts just came through my house. So I have to have a ton of food here at all times. And they do play on those kids. Well, how come you don't have such and such and such and such? It's like, sorry. And so the kids are to the point where they know when they come to my house, they get to drink water. They don't have a refrigerator full of pop. And they don't even ask anymore. It's really awesome. And that if we have any kind of chips, you know, I will go for an organic corn chip versus all the other stuff that is just as clear and clean as possible. But again, at this time of year when we are, you know, we're getting to the point where I love this actually, when we hit the 21st, when the light changes and we literally get to move back towards the light. At this time is when we really have an opportunity to stay more quiet, even though right now with how America is, we're pumped up in all of this stress of trying to get to presence and buy things that we really don't want to buy anymore. I really feel that, at least in the groups and people that I've talked with, they're to that point too. They're dreading that point. They don't feel like they want to do things. They don't want to do things that they feel obligated to do, except it's not as much fun, because again, I feel that so much of this is outmoded. It should be from the heart, not because we have to, not because it's been pushed on us by the retailers. And nothing against them, because they all need to make money too. They need to stay in business. That's part of the process. It's a matter of finding the balance with everything, you know, coming into more and more green businesses, so that it's earth friendly as well as people friendly, so that we do support our businesses and we, you know, at the same time we support ourselves.
Those are really good reminders for this time of year. But I wanted to get back to, you said more feminine energy is coming into the earth. Do you see less war and more peace? I mean, how is that going to manifest?
Absolutely. I do feel that is around the corner. Now, around the corner is an interesting concept, because we are the ones who make this illusion of time. And so we have free will, and we have the ability to change that at any time. I feel in certain probabilities it's going to happen really quickly. In other probabilities, it's going to be slower. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that in every second we have the ability to evolve and take our focus, our attention, and a group of us can then spin off into our own world. For example, there are those on this planet that are totally immersed in war. I'm not going to buy into that paradigm. I'm not going there. And there are more and more and more people that also feel that way. So when you have that many people focused on not having that come to fruition, you can create, in essence, another reality and spin off of that. We spin off realities every time. A great example of that is a movie that was made, seven, 8 years ago with Gwyneth Paltrow. It's called Sliding Doors. And they took a moment, and one aspect of herself went one direction and one aspect of herself went another direction, and how the two selves were similar. They were on similar paths but or parallel, and yet other things happened. I feel that we have that same opportunity all the time, and science is now proving this to be so, you know, where we have all these different realities within realities within realities, and we have the ability to spin that off. So when the feminine energies are coming onto the planet, I feel that's why we've got a lot of discordant emotion going on because people are trying to adjust to this. I also find it to be harder for men, and that's where the females really have to step up to the plate and really help guide men into this new emotional paradigm, being able to access their heart more. They've had to, you know, men, I'm not pointing fingers, it's just reality, is that men have had to be in their head. That's the way it's been programmed. And women stepped out of being in power. You know, I'm not one to point fingers at the men to say, oh, yeah, the men took it away from us. No, 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 we allowed that to happen. And so there's been this huge polarity shift of heavy male consciousness on the planet. So the scales have tipped, and we need to just bring it back into balance. And what's happening, I almost feel we're being hit. And it's not just, and that sounds almost like a battle cry, but I feel these energies that are coming in from all different dimensions and realities, also from the universe, that are being brought to us by those of the creators, which is awesome, and help kind of shift this paradigm into this new reality of connecting our head and our heart. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I know you're very intuitive, so basically you're picking up these feelings and thoughts.
Oh, absolutely, and I can feel them, and I can see it. I watch it with men, and then, I mean, and to be aware of the emotions and or the frequencies that are being then projected into our everyday space, again, men are being more heavily hit by this, and so there is this feeling of being discordant or being more emotional or becoming angry with things, and it's because they're trying to come into balance with activation of the heart in relationship to the head, so it's all in balance. And women have been out of balance too. I'm not saying that, because women have tried to be like men, have gone more into their heads, they've disconnected from the hearts, and that's why the feminine energy now that's coming on the planet is so positive.
That's fantastic. So we only have a minute left. Why don't you tell us your website? I know you give readings on the phone for our audience nationwide. So tell us a bit about that, and then we got to go.
Oh, you're awesome. My webpage is very simple. It's www.candiasanders.com. You can go on there, and there are a lot of stories that I've written about different clients that have had the most incredible tales to tell. I couldn't make it up if I wanted to. It's amazing. I learned so much from all of my clients. So please feel free to hop online. Contact me that way, and besides, they're a lot of fun to read. So stay tuned to us for next week here on Odyssey with Mike and his many journeys, and check out his DVD.
Thank you. Temples of Stone, the new DVD. Go to fountainsofyouth.net, and we will see you next week. Thanks a lot, Candia.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.